presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with guitarist Jesse Dayton from the new guitar supergroup, the Texas Headhunters. In our conversation, Jesse tells us about some of the studio sessions he's doing currently with Shooter Jennings. Jesse describes growing up in Beaumont, Texas, home to Johnny and Edgar Winter, and how Clifford Antone came to see him play in a club in Beaumont when he was only 15. Jesse tells us about playing with Waylon Jennings for Waylon's last recordings and his gear throughout the year. Jesse describes how a chance meeting with Kris Kristofferson got his career in gear, and likewise after working with Rob Zombie scoring Rob's movies. Jesse takes us through the lineage of the Texas Headhunters with himself, Ian Moore, and Johnny Moeller, all three discovered by Clifford Antone. To find out more about Jesse and the Texas Headhunters, you can go to his website, jessedayton.com. That's jessedayton.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my buddy Jesse. How are you doing, Jesse?
Sweet. I'm good. I'm good, brother. I'm about to head out to the recording studio and just going to chill with you for a minute.
Okay, good. I like that. What are you recording at the recording studio?
Man, I don't know if you've ever heard of this band called Shiny Ribs.
Nope. Oh, you know what? I have heard the name. They play festivals, right?
Yeah, they're a big band.
Yeah. Yes, I have heard of them.
And so there's this black girl who's one of their background singers who... I heard her and I freaked out and I was like, you got to come sing with me on this record I'm doing with Shooter. And so I started getting to know her and she's like, yeah, I've never made a solo record, but I've been on over 40 gospel records.
Wow. Wow.
And her best friend is Chanel Haynes, who got the gig with the Stones.
Oh my goodness.
So she first got the gig as Tina Turner on Broadway, and then Mick saw her and got her, like, plucked her out of that.
Damn.
And so her and this girl that I'm working with have sang together. They're like the go-to soul sisters, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I got a record label, and why don't we put out a record? So I'm making this record right now with this girl that's kind of like a blues guitar record, but, you know, kind of soul, and that she's a singer on it, and I'm playing all the guitar on it. So it's going to be, I can't wait for people to hear it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so do you spend most of your time doing session work, or are you mostly playing live, or what's your deal?
I'm mostly playing live, but I used to be a total gun for hire, you know, okay. Like I would do it all the time and fly to Nashville and LA and stuff here in Austin where I live. Oh. But if you want to know the truth, I just think cool is almost dead right now. And it's just not fun. You know, like Chrissy Hynde came out to my show in LA and I said something. I said, and it's the first time, no, in London, we were in London. It was the first time I'd ever met her. And we stayed up till 4 a.m. talking about how dead cool was.
Wow.
Like no one cares about it anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like just trying to do stuff that I love that's cool. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. Of course. Did you grow up in Austin or around Austin?
I grew up on the Texas-Louisiana border in Beaumont.
Okay.
Which is a more Cajun town than anything above New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah.
And grew up 2 blocks from Johnny and Edgar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Friends of the family. They used to come into the Dairy Queen with. They had, you know, Johnny had tattoos when only sailors and bikers had tattoos. And so, huge fan of that. But you know, big music culture there.
Sure, of course. Of course. And when did you start playing guitar? How early on?
15 years old, man. Snuck into a club, started playing. And the second week that I was playing this club, Clifford Antone from Antone's Blues Club in Austin drove down to see me play and gave me like Yeah, he gave me 5 records. He gave me Slim Harpo and Muddy Waters and, you know, like the usual suspects. Yeah, Buddy
Guy. Yeah. And it's, so you started playing clubs at 15, but when did you actually start playing guitar?
Like 15. I was a late bloomer. Yeah. I was a terrible first baseman. And I was, you know, terrible at math, but I could play guitar. And I got a gig playing in an all-black Zydeco band. And so I tell people that are starting out on guitar, I said, they're going to tell you that if you want to play the guitar rhythmically, like drums, to listen to James Brown, but what you really need to listen to is Zydeco.
Yeah.
And I love James. But if you know, basically, if you play rhythm guitar in a Zydeco band, you're a drummer.
And so, was guitar your first instrument, or you played anything before that?
I started out on drums when I was a kid. We all had mandatory piano lessons. I still got a Blue Sparkle '66 Ludwig kit up in my parents' attic in Beaumont.
Right on.
And played in little. You know, I would go down to the little honky tonk or the nursing home, and I'd play with the old timer country guys. And
yeah,
I'd go play little garage rock bands where we'd play everything from, you know, Chuck Berry to whatever, and just, you know.
Sure. What and what was your first concert? Like your first, like actually seeing people? Was it Johnny and Edgar or no?
No, but that was like my third or fourth.
Okay.
My first concert was George Jones, and he didn't show up.
Perfect.
and then we went back like 2 nights later, and he walked out on stage and tripped over the monitors. He was hammered.
Yeah.
And he tripped over the monitors and fell down, and I looked up at my dad. I go, "What's wrong with him?" And my dad goes, "Son, that's country music."
was your dad into music early on?
Big time. Yeah. Yeah, everything, you know. Even my grandfather, I remember him calling them race records, you know. Uh-huh. It was real kind of redneck shit, but that they didn't know any better, and they were out in the middle of nowhere. My dad's bringing home like Little Richard records, which, you know, I think Lemmy told me one time the most dangerous man in the history of rock and roll was a gay dishwasher from Macon, Georgia. Because he could steal your daughter and your son. So it was, you know, I mean, I had all this cool, you know, swamp pop and, you know, blues. And then, of course, you know, the grandparents. And then Willie and Waylon came in.
Yeah.
I later got that gig with Waylon playing on, like, one of his last records. And
yeah.
You know, the family was like reaccepted the weirdo after I got the Waylon gig.
Early on, what was your guitar when you were 15? What was your guitar?
So the first guitar was the Silvertone acoustic,
mm-hmm.
right? And then the first electric was a red 65 Mustang with racing stripe on the side.
Yeah, of course, with the competition stripes, of course.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the one. I wish I still had it, man, but I was young and dumb, and I sold it for some other guitar that was not as cool.
Yeah, that's okay. It's had a short scale neck, and that's not good.
Yeah, I'm too big for it anyway, but I still would like to get a guitar like that again, because it,
yeah.
You know, we had all seen that Woodstock movie, so were... You know, they played it at the midnight movie, so it was all about Hendrix, you know.
Anybody and Santana. Don't forget Santana.
Oh, absolutely. And don't forget 10 years after.
Mm-hmm. Alvin Lee.
Alvin Lee, that's when that's when you could say, hey, my older brother would say, hey, man, we're going to go see a boogie band tonight.
Well, so in Beaumont, did all the major tours come through Beaumont when you were a kid?
All the major tours, because they had to go through Beaumont to go from Houston to New Orleans.
Okay.
So we would get them on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday night for the B Market, show. And, of course, everyone showed up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there'd be, you know, I remember seeing, you know, bands like Thin Lizzy and Nazareth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there'd be, you know, 10,000 people there on a Monday night.
Oh, yeah. Right on. That's great.
Yeah.
You didn't just go from you know, playing clubs at 15 to playing with Waylon and playing with Lemmy. So how did that whole transition happen?
Well, I moved to, well, I played around Houston and the Golden Triangle a bunch, right?
Mm-hmm. The Golden Triangle? What is the Golden Triangle?
Well, South Louisiana, okay. In that part of Texas and South Louisiana.
Okay.
You know, from like Lake Charles to Beaumont.
Yep.
And, you know, there was 100 little, you know, honky tonks and juke joints to play. And that was when they still, you know, I'm old enough to where, you know, I got in before the, right at the end of the cool shit. You know what I mean? Before it all became like, you know, people became self-realized and kind of, I played. And then I went to Austin and I played at Antone's, the Continental Club, the Broken Spoke, all these places. And then people were like, oh, wow, he can play. Let's get him to play guitar for us. And I always had my own little band because I could sing. So I had a little way to make money. You know, I'd take a little three piece out and, you know, we go play for, you know, that's when rent was like, you know, $300 a month in Austin. This woman walked into the Continental Club one night and she was a big executive from Nashville. And she goes, I'll never get you on radio. She goes, but I can get you on TV.
Oh, right on.
And so she put me on this real square country show called Crook and Chase. And I show
Crook
up
and Chase, of course. I watched that show religiously.
Yeah. And they were real nice people, but it was like one step below the Christian broadcast.
Oh, yeah. Network, no, you know, TNN.
And so I get on there and I'm thinking, man, my parents are going to love this shit, but this is so uncool, you know? It's like all these guys in these cheesy Garth Brooks two-tone neon shirts and mullets and the whole thing. And, you know, and I'm show up from Austin. I get grease in my hair and tattoos. She walks in and she goes, hey, Christofferson's going to be on the show tonight. He wants to meet you.
Wow.
And that's how I got. That was my first real break. Because Chris comes backstage and he goes, hey, man, do you party? I go, fuck yeah, I party. He goes, you wanted to go to the Gibson factory after the show and go burn one? And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we walk outside and we smoke a joint. We talk about Bukowski and we go. And then I was like, okay, that was a cool night. Hung out with my mom's crush. And then the next morning at that hotel room, I got this phone call and I was staying out in the bricks, man. I couldn't afford to stay where like the country stars were staying. Sure, sure. And there's lot lizards running around, drug dealers, and it was sketchy. And this phone rings, and he goes, hey, Hollis, I saw you. I was watching for Chris last night. You want to come pick some guitar? And it was Waylon.
Yeah, right on.
And that was the beginning.
Yeah. And so you played on Waylon's last album. And how do you get hooked up with Lemmy?
Well, I didn't really get to play with Lemmy, but me and Lemmy got to be friends. The guy that I really worked closely with in heavy rock and heavy metal was Rob Zombie.
Okay.
Yeah, I ended up making 3 movies with Rob Zombie. And I did the soundtrack for The Devil's Rejects.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the soundtrack for those Halloween movies.
Yeah.
And Rob was the executive producer, and he would just give me a budget and tell me to write original songs for the films.
Yeah.
It literally changed my life, dude. I was living in a garage apartment. And then, you know, the difference between Scorsese and Rob Zombie is that Martin Scorsese, who might be the greatest director alive, he's never sold millions of records.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So Rob just told everybody, hey, this guy's putting out these soundtracks to my record, and it had his name all over it, and he gave me like, you know, 75% of the publishing. So I bought a house and I put my kid through college, and you know what I mean? It made my life a lot easier.
Sure. And had you had any, like, I mean, you probably hadn't done any soundtrack stuff before that, but like,
I'd only done TV stuff, and then were they licensed songs, you know what I mean? Where they just call up and say, hey, we want to put your song in Justified or Sons of Anarchy or whatever. So, but I'd never scored anything. And Rob just called me up and talked me through this. Hey, man, it's no big deal. You know, Rob's like the smartest guy ever. He looks like the biggest party animal of all, but he's kind of like a nerd and a genius guy.
And did you have to work with time signatures and everything? Like, I mean,
yeah, on some of it.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's hard work.
Yeah, it was real, but it was, you know, compared to working in an oil field in Texas,
sure.
I felt like I was stealing, dude.
I know. Well, I shouldn't say it's hard work, but it's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure, but I did the first time I ever walked into a recording studio was with this really crazy producer named Huey P. Moe, and he ended up getting busted for pedophilia, and they killed him in prison, and it was crazy. But he produced Wasted Days and Wasted Nights by Freddie Fender,
sure, of course,
and a bunch of hits. And man, he gave me $50 to play on a Zydeco session. I was like, I felt like I just robbed the guy.
Skipping ahead, how did the Texas Headhunters come about? And do you know Greg Martin?
Greg Martin, yeah.
Yeah. Is he pissed that you stole the Headhunter thing?
No. But, you know, there was the Headhunters thing out of New York, the jazz thing.
Yeah, of course.
And then there was the Kentucky Headhunters.
Yes, Greg Martin's band.
Right. And so there was actually a band called the Headhunters before Kentucky.
Okay.
There was. It was Herbie Hancock. It was heavy guys. We know their names more than we know Greg Martin's name.
Yeah.
And by the way, I love the Kentucky Headhunters.
Likewise.
I think they're fucking cool. I mean, when I saw that drummer and those old guitars they were playing, I was like, oh, this is going to be cool, you know?
Sure. Likewise with the Georgia Satellites.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I love Dan Baird. He's a good friend of mine.
Oh, good. Yeah, he's fantastic.
He's amazing. Yeah, one time I got a publishing deal in Nashville, and we're all sitting at this table, and the guy goes, who do you want to write with in Nashville? And I go, I want to write a redneck rock anthem with Dan Baird. And they're like, really? That's who you want to write with?
Right on.
So me and Ian Moore and Johnny Muller were all discovered by Clifford Antone when we were kids.
Okay.
So Clifford, who owned, you know, Antone's Home of the Blues.
Yep.
And he discovered, you know, Stevie and Jimmy and the Sexton Brothers. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on. He found me and Beaumont at that club when I was 15. He found Ian when he was 12.
Wow.
He found Johnny Muller, I think, left high school and his dad just dropped him off at the club.
Wow.
Like, seriously. Like, so Johnny plays with the Thunderbirds full time now. And, you know, Ian had this, you know, pretty astounding career in the 90s. Like, he was on tour with the Stones and on tour with ZZ Top. Yep. And, you know, these guys like John Mayer come up to him and they're like, oh my God, you were the man. And so I was talking to my manager in New Orleans, Reuben Williams, and he was like, man, you should put together like a 3-man Texas blues thing. And I was like, yeah, man, there was this 80s record that had Johnny Clyde Copeland and Robert Cray and Albert Collins on it, and it was called, I forgot the name of it, Showtime or something like that. And I was like, let's make a record like that. So we did, and we just went out and did our first 6 shows ever.
Wow.
We never done, you know, we went and played with Samantha. We literally just played our first 6 shows as a band.
Uh-huh. That right on. So you guys were playing with Samantha Fish?
Yeah. So me and Samantha made that record together.
Yep,
right?
Yeah.
And that was kind of a hit record for us, for both. You know, it was her biggest record and my biggest record.
Mm-hmm.
And we got nominated for a Grammy, and we went on tour for 17 months.
Wow.
And, yeah, all over the world. It was crazy. And, you know, she's like family to me, dude. Like, you know, and I know her because she used to open up for me in Kansas City when she was a kid.
Okay, right on.
She was a little hip, barefoot hippie girl opening up for me.
And so are you guys planning on, are you going to tour behind the album?
Yeah, yeah. We're going out at the end of August.
Okay.
And we're going to go into September, and we're going to do a bunch of gigs. And, you know, we're doing it kind of, we got a new single coming out tomorrow. Featuring Johnny Mueller on vocals, because we all switch, you sure. know, we yeah. all sing different things.
And which is it Maggie Went Back to Mineola, or is it?
No, that was the first one. That's the one I did.
Okay.
And then we did, and that one's kind of got this 70s, you know, ZZ Top, East Texas kind of sure, thing. Sure.
Yeah.
And then we did Kathleen, which is more like, you know, Ian's Hendrix kind of trip.
Sure.
And then we got this new one coming out with Johnny. Shit, what's the name of the song? Give Me Some Love is okay. the name of it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And that's coming out tomorrow with a video and right everything. So.
Yeah. I better get this out quick then so people can watch it and get your numbers up.
Where are you at, dude?
I'm in Napa, California.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's all right. A tourist town.
It's pretty though.
It is pretty. Yeah, but
you know,
yeah, it's all right. Same with Austin. Austin is pretty.
Austin's great, but it's the devil's armpit right now until after August.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no,
I mean,
we don't have your humidity, that's for sure.
I mean, if it didn't get 110 degrees for like 3 months here, everyone would live here.
And if it wasn't as expensive as hell, everybody would live here.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
So what's your guitar collection look like?
Man, right now I'm using a 73 Fender Tele Deluxe, and I'm using this 56 Silvertone for slide.
Okay.
It's a solid body.
Yeah, the Tele Deluxe and, with humbuckers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm also using this guitar called a King, which is really a Blast Cult.
Huh.
Out of London that a friend of mine made for me, and I play it in that Rob Zombie movie, okay. Halloween 2, I think it is. I'm on screen with that, so you know, that one's it's a custom guitar with no serial number.
Oh, right on.
And it stays in tune better than a Gretsch. It looks like a Trini Lopez on crack. because it's got the two horns.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really big, like a Gretsch.
Yeah, yeah. I think I saw it in the video.
It's got a Bigsby, and you can just, I mean, it's never more than 2 cents off between songs when you just wear that Bigsby out.
Right on.
And then I've been using this other one that's kind of a little Frankenstein guitar that's ridiculous. It's like it's a 76 Tele neck on an 81 Tele body because I guess in the early 80s they started making the soap bar pickup things.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I hated the neck, so I put that on. And then I got a Martin that's, you know, I'll use the, if we do acoustic stuff, you know, I got this Martin that's pretty, it's the holy grail of my collection.
Uh-huh. What's the Martin all about?
So the Martin, there's only six of them made.
Uh-huh.
And the luthier, I always say Steve Luthier. the luthier who made it, he only worked for Martin for like 2 years.
Wow.
And Clapton has two, and Jack White bought the other two from Bowie.
Wow.
And Bowie's widow.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a friend of mine who's a gazillionaire in Texas owned two, and he somehow said, "Hey, man, I want you to have one of these guitars." And It was 42. It's a 1981, and it was 42 grand in 81.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah. it's amazing, dude. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
When you play it, like, I got to play Segovia, one of Segovia's guitars.
Did you really?
Yeah, and when you were playing it, I was nervous, as you can imagine.
Sure.
But I could actually feel the wood almost breathing. This guitar does that.
Okay. And what's the body style? Is it a triple O or?
Yeah. Well, no. It's a 45 body style.
Oh, okay. All right. Right on.
But it's not called a D45, but it looks just like one.
Sure. I gotcha. Yeah, right on.
Anyway, but I got, you know, I used to have a ton of guitars, and I used to have a ton of hot rods and a ton of motorcycles.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I got in my 50s, and I just got sick of having all that shit.
Sure.
You can only play or ride one at a time, you know?
Yeah. And so, did you sell them, or what'd you do with them?
I sold them, yeah. I sold a bunch of them, man, because I was never going to play them. And
yeah.
I didn't need the money, but I just got tired of storing them.
Yeah, I get you.
Same with the motorcycles, man. I had a bunch of them, and I, you know, all the cool European stuff, British stuff, and I was just like, this is kind of an embarrassment of riches, you know?
And where did you sell the guitars? Like, did you go through a music store?
There were people who wanted them.
Oh, gotcha.
That I knew who were, you know, guitar players and collectors and stuff like that. And, you know, I sold, I think, 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept, so now I only have like, I don't know, I only have like 14 or 15 guitars now.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's not bad. And I only play like three of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so... what about amps? What are you doing for amps?
Well, I'm doing, all kinds of different amps. I have a custom amp that Bruce Zinke designed for me.
Yeah.
That is when he first revamped Supro.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the O1 of that.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. I've learned that if you get an older amp that has more than 30 watts or 20 watts, and you put a 15-inch speaker in it, and you crank it up all the way, it will crackle, and you'll get that sound that barely breaks up instead of sounding like a fucking mosquito.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's supposed to sound, where it breaks up, you know, that faces sound and that teeth sound.
Yep.
And of course, you know, they use Princeton's, but I mean, you know, you can, so I'm into these like 15 inch high watt old amps, but Orange just sent me an amp that I really like.
Uh-huh.
Shit, I should know the name of it. It's their American version of, can't remember it right now. That's something fine. Verb. Yeah. The Verb. It's really cool, but I use like I'm into Deluxes and Princetons.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, of course.
You know, the stuff, the real shit,
the real shit. Do you have like a bunch of old Princetons and?
Yeah, I got a bunch of. I got them. I'm using my motorcycle shop to store my amps. So,
do you have more amps than guitars?
Yeah, right now, but I just sold 4 amps.
Okay, all right.
So I'm starting to peel those off, too, uh-huh. Because it's just ridiculous, yeah. You know? I mean, I just feel like a hoarder, and you know, I don't know. There's something that makes me feel uneasy, like it kind of my working class sensibility. Kinda, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So what's your car right now?
Well, lately I've been driving this 25 anniversary 78 Corvette.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, it's like driving a hard-on. It's like you're just like – and but I also have a 49 Mercury that's pretty cool, and it's all chopped and lowered and all that.
Oh, that's cool.
But,
yeah.
But I really like the Vette because I got the 8-track – in there with, I think I've got Glenn Campbell and Nazareth in eight tracks.
That's fantastic.
So it's cool, you know, like, you know, I think when you, you know how it is when you get our age and you, all that stuff from when you were a little kid becomes so important.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fucking HR Puff and stuff.
Totally. All that shit, man.
Yeah. Well, are you guys going to come out to California, do you think?
Yes, we are going to come out. And I'll tell you, I think the dates are up at jessedayton.com.
Okay, I'll check them out.
And, but dude, come out and hang out. And
I will.
Let's say hello in person.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's been great talking to you, Jesse. This has been fun.
Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. All have right. A great day.
Is it James or Jim?
It's James, but you can call me whatever the fuck you want.
Okay. I'll call you James. All right, man. See you, bro.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Later.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.